have you got a mean streak when you're out there refereeing?
Yeah, he pulls out a syringe when a player's down that he doesn't like. He sticks it up his arse.
that might be edited, that bit.
No, we'll leave that bit in. That's quite funny.
This is Referee's World with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon.
Hello again and welcome to the Referee's World podcast, which offers education and training for football referees of all levels. You can now listen to our weekly podcast every Friday night from 5 p.m. by subscribing on the website refereesworld.co.uk or signing up to your podcast provider. You'll be notified when we drop a new episode. We also have the Referee's World podcast YouTube channel. Don't forget to subscribe to that because occasionally we have little videos which may be of good purpose to you in a training kind of way. And that's what this whole podcast is all about. If you're a new listener, welcome along. My name's Darren Cullum. I'm a level 5 referee affiliated with Somerset FA. And this is PGMOL Observer and Southwest Pool Observer Coordinator, Richard Mellin.
Hi, Darren.
How you doing?
Yeah, hanging in there, just avoiding the rain. It's hideous here at the moment, but...
Yeah, so just to give a little bit of sense of day, it is the 11th of May, 2021. The sun is shining outside of my studio at the moment, but where you are, Rich, in Bridgewater, it's obviously a little less gorgeous as it is for me. And we'll find out from our guest what the weather's like where he is in just a moment. But first of all, just before we go into our guest, Rich, I just want to throw this one at you. Since we last spoke, I ran the line on a semi-final. Not so much of a match incident, but something which I'm sure has happened in the past. Behind me, there was a group of players and one of them had their little kiddie that was there playing around by the side of the line, aged about 4 or 5. And quite often I had to sort of run down the line when the attacking play was going in that direction. And the kiddie was in my way. And it was a case of, well, on one occasion I had to jump over him. On another occasion, I nearly tripped up myself. But potentially there could have been a little bit of an accident there. What are your thoughts on that scenario? And as an assistant referee, how would you deal with that very quickly? Let's say, for example, I clashed into the kiddie. Do I stop, drop what I'm doing and concentrate to make sure the kiddie's all right? Or how does the phase of play continue?
I would like to have thought that you wouldn't have clashed into the young person, because obviously it's a concern that a young person is so close to the field of play that an assistant referee is going to collide with that person. So it's in the interest for that young person that you have the game stopped. And I say it should be stopped immediately rather than have an accident, because we don't want that. And football becomes secondary in that type of situation for the well-being and the safety of that young person. So I would encourage you to sort of be mindful where play is. So hopefully it's not in the penalty area, et cetera, et cetera, at your end. But as you describe it, it sounds as though play was in open midfield area. So I would just say you need to make sure that young person is removed from the touchline area for their own safety, as well as yours, which in a way, being an adult, colliding with a young person, their safety is first and foremost.
So would you say I would be going over the top if, say, for example, when the ball went out of play, I raised my flag, called over the referee and explained the situation, having already asked the player behind me to sort of just be careful, watch his children, that kind of thing. We were in we're on a 3G pitch inside a court, so sometimes the fences are quite close to where you are. So yeah, there wasn't a lot of room going on. And I think you know the ground that I'm talking about here, at Sydenham School in Bridgewater.
BCA Academy.
Lovely playing surface, but there was that potential. So it was just one of those questions that, you know, it's nice to get a little bit of a tip in the future, because there will be people listening to this that have been in that same situation. You know, it may have been far worse than what I encountered, but, you know, it's nice to know what to do in the situation. But would I be out of my remit here by calling the referee over and saying, look, this is the situation, can you please ask the player concerned and his children to sort of shift out of the way?
Yeah,
or am I just going a bit over the top?
No, you're not going over the top, Dave. It's a responsible approach to a problem that could escalate. And if there was an accident, then you're right to try and prevent that accident from happening. It's a safety feature. And that's the most important part of it. The referee should not sort of be, a bit miffed that you called him over to have a child removed from the touchline. That risk should be removed for the fact of safety. And it goes the same with technical areas to Supply League football. No child under a particular age, I think it's 14, is allowed in the technical area, and so consequently they don't face the trials and tribulations of what goes on in that technical area, and they should not be allowed in there for that reason. It's a safety feature as well as all the other things that come into play for it.
Okay, great. I'm glad you've answered that. Thank you very much for that. Let's crack on with our guest, a gentleman who has suffered some disappointment in his refereeing career. He's from Bristol. He's studying at Nottingham University. Delighted to welcome to the Referees World podcast, Dan Gent. Now, you're more so a colleague and a friend of Rich's. You two have got a little bit of history. So, Rich, very quickly over to you.
The description of "we got a little bit of history" sounds very suspicious, suspect. And let me say to you, we've never appeared in any police station around Bristol, Bridgewater or Nottingham. We're very compliant with the laws of this land.
Good. So, excellent work.
I met Dan about 5 years ago, Dan.
About 5 years ago, I think, yeah.
First of all, just tell us a bit about yourself, a bit about your background, and a bit about how you got into refereeing.
Of course, yeah. Well, first of all, thank you very much for having me on the podcast this evening. So I passed my refereeing course when I was 14, so that was 12 years ago now. My dad was a referee before, so that's really what gave me the idea. I fancied it, so as soon as I turned 14, I took the course, passed, and started refereeing youth football. Moved up to open age football when I was 16 and went from there. Got my level 4 about 5 or 6 years ago now in 2014. Moved away to university. So first of all, I studied biochemistry, and then after that I studied medicine. Was a level 4 for 5 seasons. And then, as we mentioned, which I'm sure we'll talk about a bit later on in the podcast as well, I went back down to level 5 for a season. Jumped back up again to level 4 after that, and that's where I am now.
Excellent. Okay, so let's just touch on that first of all. You came down from level 4 to level 5, having had 4 or 5 good seasons at that standard. Do you know why? Do you think that the studies got in the way, or what do you think was the reason for that drop?
Yeah, that's a good question, Darren. I think there's probably a lot of factors in play. I think it was a particularly tough time of the course. We're doing longer hours in the hospital. We had some exams in February. And as you know, the end of the marking season, as it was then, was at the end of February. So I think I was probably just spending a lot more focus on my studies, on my exams in the hospital. And when it got to a Saturday, I was maybe perhaps just a little bit off the pace, not as focused and switched on as I should be, and perhaps that reflected in some of my observations or assessments, as they were known then. So it's hard to pinpoint the exact reason, but I think that was probably definitely a contributing factor.
I know that Rich was keen to talk to you about disappointment in such a situation. Rich, over to you.
Yeah, I mean, working with Dan for those 3 seasons, I think it was, and then to have the kick in the shins, or blip, as some people may want to call it, to lose the status of level 4. How did you deal with it, Dan? Can you recall those emotions?
Yeah, well, it came off somewhat of a shock when I got the letter through from the FA. And I think it makes you reevaluate your career in refereeing, if it's something you want to carry on for and go for long term, because obviously going back to level 5 is a long season, getting the observations back in, trying to get back up to level 4. So I remember we had a long chat when the letter came through and discussed everything that was going on. And I think that was invaluable, really, because I think it gave me a chance to stop, just review everything, think about where my career was going in refereeing, where my career was going in medicine. And I came to the conclusion that let's give this one more go.
It's very disappointing to have that demotion. But for our listeners, it's what I'm trying to sort of allude to here is you've got to have a little bit of mental toughness. and, you know, determination to prove those people wrong that, you know, you are a capable referee and you do justify the level four status. You must be stretched in so many different directions, you know?
Yeah, I think you definitely adapt the skills necessary in order to prioritise what's important at the time. I think I've got to be very careful and mindful not to do one at the expense of the other. For example, I think what previously happened when I went back to level five is I'd been a level four for some time. My studies were stepping up and possibly I got complacent in my refereeing. I think I need to be mindful that could possibly happen again in a few years' time. So it's important to probably reflect quite consistently to make sure that's not happening.
I think you're still, I mean, how old are you now? 25?
I'm 26 now.
26, okay. So in the grand scheme of things, you are still considerably young. I didn't take my course until I was 26. And Rich, I don't think you started until you were about 30, did you?
I started at 28.
Yeah, there you go, say.
So. 28. So, you know, and Dan's a lot further down the line than what I was at that age. At 26, I hadn't even considered refereeing. Mm. You know, I was still doing a little bit of playing and everything else like that. Dan, let me ask a question. From, you know, we're always looking at diversity within refereeing, and certainly having you with the graduated to the level of Doctor of Medicine, how do you use any of your skills in football into managing the hospital situation and being a doctor and vice versa?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the two have a lot of similarities and overlap in some ways and are also polar opposites in other ways. I think dealing with pressure, dealing with the unknown is common in both, especially as a student. I guess most of my experiences at the moment are as a medical student rather than a doctor. And as a student, you spend quite a lot of time on various different wards, different specialties, introducing yourself to people that you don't know, working with people in a team that you don't know. And it's the same with refereeing. You turn up on a Saturday and you're working with two assistants who you don't know. You're possibly going to a team or a club for the first time, and you have to learn how to work with people very quickly in order to get the job done. So I think they're definitely transferable skills between the two professions or careers. And I think the similarities with both is you've got a set of skills, which are the basic competencies that you need in medicine. It's the knowledge of medicine. In refereeing, it's the basic skills. Can you recognize a free kick? Can you recognize a yellow and red card? But then, as you know, in refereeing, half the battle is communication and how you sell the decisions. And quite often in medicine, half the battle is communication and how you interact with patients.
I couldn't have asked you to have said it any better than what you said, because I listened to that and I forgot almost what you said, but I'm going to listen back to the podcast again for that particular answer, because the skill sets, and you mentioned about back to basics, time and time again on the podcast, people hear me and Darren talk about the basics, refer back to the basics. I talk with all my friends in refereeing. We talk about the basics time and time again. And so many times we will say, refer to the basics to remind yourself of what you need to do. And here you are, an educated doctor talking about doing the basics. So, you know, for me, it carries a big, huge tick in the box about how you're going to go about it.
Yeah, definitely. And once you've got them down, the rest of it is down to the art of medicine or the art of refereeing and the experience that you get over the years.
This brings me on to the topic of life skills and how many great life skills you can actually learn by being a referee, don't you think, Dan?
Enormously, yeah. I think I recommend it to anyone who's 14, 15, starting up. It just helps with so many different walks of life. It'll help you in studying, in your career. It puts you in those uncomfortable positions, and I think a lot of people do thrive in them if they're happy to go for it.
Can I just go back to you as a young referee who's 14 years old? You're still at school. You're yet to approach your GCSEs, but you're out there every weekend earning yourself a little bit of pocket money. How did you feel on those first few games?
Oh, it's absolutely terrifying the first few games that you go out. It's scary because you're the only one out there. When you're starting out as a referee, you don't have neutral assistants, so you are the one man or boy in the middle. Mm. My dad came out to watch a few of my early games, so as a friendly face on the sideline. But for those 90 minutes or 70 minutes in youth games, you're the only one and everyone's going to be looking at you. So it is very terrifying to begin with. But it's the same with anything in any walk of life. The more you do it, the more comfortable you get at it, the better you get at it. And it's almost a positive feedback cycle. And it just helps each other. The more years of experience you've got, it helps you. And obviously can go out and do a game now. And thankfully don't have that same level of anxiety as I did when I was 14 when I first picked up the whistle.
For those that are listening, Dan, have you got any tips and advice as you've gone along the way that sort of stick out as a gem?
I think that's a difficult question to answer, because I think different pieces of advice help different people at their stage of refereeing. I think probably the most important thing is make sure you enjoy what you're doing. If you don't, you're not going to be in the frame of mind to referee a game, and I think it's going to be obvious to the players and the clubs and the benches that you don't really want to be there. So if you're not enjoying it, and if you don't really want to get up on a Saturday and referee that game, then I think it's going to show. So find a way to enjoy it. Talk to your colleagues. For those that are a bit higher up the ladder, when you're traveling long distances, use that time to get to know who you're going to be working with on that day. Just sort of build a refereeing community
and get a mentor.
Yeah,
which
I mean, yeah, I should have mentioned that earlier, but
I had a promotion seminar a couple of nights ago, and now as part of the promotion, every referee now has to mentor at least one referee as part of their promotion. So it's kind of like they're giving back to the refereeing community that sort of helped them along the way.
Yeah, it definitely goes both ways. I mean, the phone calls I've had with Rich over the years, before a game on a Saturday, sometimes after the game, they definitely do go a long way, because we all have good games, we all have bad games. And when you have the bad game, you just want a friendly voice on the end of the phone just to sort of release your frustrations about the game. And I think definitely there's a lot to be said for offering something back to people younger than you, or referees more junior than you, because it really does help you realise the skills that you've acquired over the years when you're passing on that knowledge to more junior match officials.
Yeah. Dan, how would you, being a doctor of medicine, I would say your tolerance is very, very high. Yeah? So have you got a mean streak when you're out there refereeing?
Yeah, he pulls out a syringe when a player's down that he doesn't like. He sticks it up his ass.
that might be edited, that bit.
No, we'll leave that bit in. That's quite funny.
Dan, we've distracted you there.
But now I think you're spot on. You need to almost be able to act when you're on the field of play. When you are in medicine in a hospital, when you're speaking to patients, you need to have a different demeanor, personality almost about you than when you're dealing with a player who's just seen what he can get away with on the day, or maybe he's gone in on one or two tackles slightly harder. I think you do need to be able to change your outwards expression, because you can't use the same thing for both, because simply they don't work, because you're dealing with people from two completely different demographics. So I think you do need to be able to switch that on and off when necessary, for sure, yeah.
I'm glad you're able to differentiate between the two. I'd be a bit worried if you were sort of letting a lot of red card tackles go without being penalised or being out without being sanctioned, like, you know. So I just wanted to check that one out about tolerance as regards to you know, being a bit mean, and we got to deliver, you know, the expected outcome.
Yeah, you definitely need to, even now we've spoken about the transferable skills, you definitely need to remember where you are and don't get my vanishing sprout on the walls or anything on those lines. Yeah. But yeah, you have to switch quickly if necessary, if you've done a long day at the hospital, talking to patients about illnesses or trying to communicate and have some sort of sympathy, empathy. And then 2 hours later, you're faced with a 6'5" man screaming in your face. You need to approach that situation differently.
See, on the other side of the coin, there is now a situation, and, you know, it may well happen in your refereeing career where your profession as a doctor steps into play because of a serious incident on the field of play.
Definitely. I think especially during the later couple of years of my medical degree, when I've known a bit more knowledge, you almost want to feel like you can get involved when players are down, but you have to remember that that's not your job on that day. Mm. sometimes I stand there with a bit of amusement when the physio comes on and sprays a bit of magic spray and the player gets up again. I think, and they haven't been taught this bit of medicine yet. Maybe that's for the more experienced doctors. But definitely sometimes more serious things happen on the pitch, unfortunately. And if there was an emergency situation, of course, the refereeing of you goes out the window and you just have to act as a doctor. And if there's a life-threatening situation, I guess I'd have to jump in. Hopefully that doesn't happen, but it's nice to know I could possibly help someone if that happened to be the case in the future.
I was just about to say, you don't want to do it like that. You want to do it like this, is when the physio comes on, isn't it? You know? I can see the sponge man, you know, the true sponge man locally comes on with good intention to help the player that's sort of got a bit of a knock. And he just gets the sponge out of the bucket. And I can see Dan going up to him and say, no, you don't do it like that. You do it like this.
Shaking my head at him, yes.
Well, listen, Dan, it's been a really interesting outlook, really interesting talking to you on the podcast. Is it fair to say, mate, that you look a bit like Ross from Friends?
You'd be surprised how many times I've heard that over the years.
Yeah. For anybody listening now that has got or wanted some idea as to how you may look when you come out on the field of play, imagine Ross from Friends wearing a referee's kit.
Dr. Ross Geller.
Brilliant. Excellent. Dan, is there anything you want to throw at us before you go? Anything you want to share with us to do with refereeing?
Just thanks very much for having me on. I've had fun speaking to you two guys tonight. And keep it going. I've listened to a few of the podcasts recently and they're very good, very informative. So keep doing what you're doing.
Hey, Rich, that's another listener, mate. That's four we've found this month. Our guest on the Referees World podcast is Daniel Gent, who is a student studying medicine in Nottingham and is from Bristol.
Can I butt in, Mr. Cullum, and say Dr. Daniel
Gent?
Oh,
sorry. Beg your pardon. Sorry.
He has graduated.
Oh, yes, of course. How dare I? How dare I? I feel that syringe heading in my direction. Dr. Daniel Gent. Brilliant. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Darren.
The download is complete.
This is Referees World with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon.